Extravaganza.
Happy New Year and welcome to 2024, all you creepies, boo fans, and scaredy cats out there in the world. I am Pops Ghostly. This is the Horror Pop Extravaganza, episode 12. And with me, as always, is
Carl Beefstar.
Carl Beefstar. I can draw that. I can draw that, Carl.
Coral? Coral Beefstar.
Yeah, maybe it's a big, like, Coral Beefstar.
Yeah.
Anyway, Carl, I just want to jump right in today because today is one we are very excited about, both of us coming to the table. I will say, and maybe talking through this with you will reignite a little something in me. There are pieces of this that I feel like have not aged well.
Oh.
Because it's been a couple of years since I watched it, and I'm like, oh, okay. But there's still so much to love here.
The first line of dialogue, man, is like,
yeah,
not
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Right. It's strange when he comes into the bar. But yes, and I'm not even talking about the dialogue. I'm thinking more just the... There was that era that like really fast cut fucking like 2000, you know, early 2000s going into the late 2000s. And for like everything starts to feel like a Rob Zombie music video. And it's like, you know what I mean? And I feel some of that, even though, you know, I can go back to the time because I remember all this stuff coming out and thinking it was so cool. But now it's almost like, yeah, did we make the right call? You know, it's like with some fucking 80s music. Like there's too much synth in that shit. Like take it out a little bit. You know, you take it too far. It gets there, but there's a lot to love about this movie and a ton to talk about, which is 2006's Feast. And I'm gonna let Carl Beefstar take us. Is that the first time I ever got it right? Was it Carl Beefstar?
I think that's the first time you got it right, dude. Yeah,
sweet. All right, so Carl, why don't you and this is a big one, so take your time, you know, on the how this thing happened, because the Project Greenlight I think is important to talk about as well. So yeah, man, do your thing.
Absolutely, yes. This is a product of Project Greenlight, which was a thing that Matt Damon and Ben Affleck put together back in the day, trying to give some underbrothers some love, because that's kind of how they came up. You know, they wrote Good Will Hunting for themselves to star in. And so they created this project and they were letting like unknown filmmakers make a movie. And so old John Guglielmer got to make Feast, rated R, 1 hour and 35 minutes. And you're going to love this synopsis, dude. It is one of our best.
Okay.
Patrons locked inside a bar are forced to fight monsters. Period.
Boom. That, you know what, though? That sets it up beautifully. But continue before we start talking about this, because I think there is a reason that synopsis is so short. But anyway, continue with the cast and stuff like that.
Absolutely. So our cast, our wide range of cast, Navi Rawat is the heroine. I haven't really seen her in anything. I didn't even recognize her from anything.
No, and there's, I feel like, and again, this, and sadly, you know, there are those actresses that work for like a couple years and then, you know, they're gone.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, you're in your prime, you know, we're going to put you on film for a little while. And then who knows, maybe she does have some credits that we don't know about. But either way, I do think it's important to stop here, though, and talk about how nobody has a real name.
No, everybody has a bullshit name in this.
Not even bullshit. It's like the, but you're, I mean, kind of bullshit, but there were two books I bought and they were like the 45 master characters and the 45 like master scenarios or some shit.
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is that, dude.
Yeah,
you just put like the heroine, the hero, the so-and-so, the maybe make it, the rebel biker mama, the old bartender, the military vet. It's like everything is just pulled straight from it. And I like that because they just took this thing right back to fundamental story. I mean, this is how you tell a story, people. Like, if you watch this movie, you could take these characters, flesh them out a little more, because this fucker hits you like a train from second one and does not let up until you're done with this movie. But you look at it, it's like, fuck, the hero's journey. But then what they did was subvert all the expectations from the story piece.
Right.
Which what we've seen for our entire lives in story, you know, from fucking Winnie the Pooh, Cat in the Hat, all the way up to this shit, we've seen certain heroes' journeys. So they took the expectations and just turned the whole fucking thing on its head. And I think that's what made this so special.
For sure. Yeah.
But continue with the cast, please. I just wanted to make sure we took a second to talk, because I really like that they did what they did here. I think it's a super cool thing.
Yeah, me too. Next on the list is Kirsta Allen. She was my girl in the 2000s, man.
Yeah.
She plays Tuffy. And man, is she gorgeous. Just the camera just loves this woman.
It does, dude. She's, you know, it's like a, she's like a Gal Gadot or a she looks like she could be like carved out of stone.
Right.
And you're right. Like they frame her in like perfect ways. It's and her performance, though, I think this strength that she brings as a character is also just, it's a super, like, you know, the hero's journey when you see it fully. It's dope as fuck.
Well, so, that's one of the things that's unfortunate with her career is that she got looped into that like hot girl thing and she never really got to play anything with real gravitas. And she's a really good actress. So it sucks.
And that sucks. You know, it does suck. And sometimes you get both, you know, Margot Robbie with Wolf of Wall Street. It was like, you know, they gave her the ability. She was like, yeah, I'll be naked all day, dude, because I get to play this, you know, more well-rounded character and shit. And you're working for fucking Scorsese. So who gives a fuck? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's you're just like, yes. Yeah. Yes, like I'll show up.
I'm pulling dong for Scorsese, dude. I don't know about you.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely would. I'd be like, I'll show up ass naked and just wander and be like, you were looking for an illustrated man? You want me to tattoo something on my dick? I'll do it myself right now. Like I brought my machine and I'll write your name on it. MS. But yeah, no, but you're right. She's and everyone in this movie, I think, shows the fuck up with great performances.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I believe there had to have been a lot of good energy around this. You know, the funding was there.
Mm-hmm.
Very smart with the funding,
right.
You know, get the people and you see faces show up. You're like, oh, that's, you know, you can see Damon and Affleck's connections and a little bit of this stuff.
Yeah.
And even the director with his fucking grandpa. Is it his dad? That's
his,
the bartender.
His father and
his father.
Wife is in it, too.
She plays the Harley or biker mama. Yeah, biker mama. So continue with, I know I keep cutting you off. I'm sorry.
It's okay. We've got to talk about these because these are amazing casting choices. So, and
they really
are. Our next one is the same thing as Kirsta, dude. Balthazar Getty. Yeah, a fucking beautiful man, a fucking wonderful performer, but he just never like got into that like A-list job.
And it sucks,
you know?
when you see that, man. And I know there were some other people's names thrown around for this, like Mark Wahlberg and possibly what's his name? Josh Duhamel.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was possibly going to be in it, which is cool, you know? And I think there was a lot of excitement because this was the, do you know how many this was in? Cause there were already a couple Project Greenlights.
Right.
Right.
I think this was the third season.
Okay. So people were wanting to be around these things. They were seeing the success of the first couple seasons that had run. So it's cool that it all kind of came together.
Absolutely. Joda Freelander from 30 Rock. I mean,
oh, yes.
Just a fucking champion, dude. Like, and they just cast him so well in this part. Like, he was so,
everybody's cast so well.
So
dude.
Good, dude. So good. Dwayne Whitaker, who we all know is Zed from Pulp Fiction.
Yes.
Zed's dead, baby.
Zed's dead.
Diane Alia Goldner, who is Harley Mama, and that is the director's wife, girlfriend, real weird situation.
Oh,
thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see her pop up in horror from time to time. Like she was in Rob Zombie's Halloween 2, you know, where he was putting people all in there. Yeah. So she has quite a line of horror credits to her name. She was in Pulse 3. I didn't even know there was Pulse 2.
Hey, man, I've seen Evil Bong 7.
Yeah.
There's fucking, they go on for.
She's probably in it, dude.
Right.
Josh Zuckerman plays Hot Wheels, which. Problematic naming for this character who is crippled
is
in
a
wheelchair.
Wheelchair.
And Josh Zuckerman was from Sex Drive.
I think crippled might be a problematic word. He's just disabled in a wheelchair.
Yeah, you know.
Or he's just in a wheelchair.
He's a man in a wheelchair.
You know what, though? I was at a rave one time in Seattle, and there was this DJ named DJ Wheels, and that motherfucker had like 22s on his wheelchair, dude. And them shit had spinners
fuck
on them,
yeah,
and it was clean as fuck. I was like, and he just owned it. DJ Wheels, let's take it.
Probably my favorite casting choice in this, Henry motherfucking Rollins.
He's a great piece of shit.
He's
great
so
piece of shit.
Good, dude. And there were so many times where I was like, okay, what he's doing right now, the average viewer, the unknowing viewer would be like, oh, he's a terrible actor, but he is owning it and he is doing it on purpose. He is being the most Henry Rollins he's ever been.
He does. He shows up and he's fantastic, dude. And you're right. He never breaks from it, and you don't see like the punk rock Rollins. You know, he stays with that like motivational fucking sleazeball. You know, just do anything for a buck and shit, and just gross.
And through 50% of this movie, he's wearing pink sweatpants. I mean,
yes, yes.
Only Rollins, who's so secure in his masculinity, could rock a pink sweatpants through this whole movie. Eileen Ryan plays Grandma. She's great.
Great casting, dude. Reminded me a lot of CCH Pounder from Deep in Night, dude. I was like, this feels kind of familiar, but which is cool, though. Familiar in a good way. But her being this just seen it all. And I think her title card says, like, Blue Mick Jagger recently.
Yeah.
And it's... when I rewatched it, I was like, I remember that making me laugh the first time. That's funny as fuck this time. And she's just this, you know, she's seen it all, man. She's seen it all.
Absolutely.
Battle tested.
Battle hardened, yeah. Next are the man, the myth, Jason fucking Mewes.
Dude, the first time I saw this movie, I remember being so excited.
Oh, yeah.
Dude. That fucking, and he showed up as Mewes, though. He's, right. You know, he's Mewes, the actor.
His character is Jason Mewes, the actor.
And, you know, this was probably a Matt Damon
or
Ben Affleck thing, you know, being so close to the View Askew stuff. But, yeah, it was really cool to see Mewes just kind of be, you know, Mewes, I guess.
Yeah.
Even though I, you know, I've met the dude a couple times and he's very timid in life. Like, he's not he's not the Jay Mewes that he is on camera and shit. Like, they're the exact opposite. It's like Kevin Smith will talk for fucking 8 hours and Jay Mewes will be like, oh, let's play Let Us Fuck and do a funny game or something. You know, but Mewes is a great dude. It's cool to see him in this because it's so different for the most part than a lot of the other shit he does.
Yeah, I think this is the first time we saw him outside of Jay and Silent Bob. Now he's been in some other stuff. I mean, he had been in some stuff back then too.
Well, I think this might have been when he was, you know, in a bit of a bad way.
Yeah,
I can't remember the years when he was really bad on the heroin. But Jay Mewes been clean as fuck for like a long time. Fucking awesome, dude. Keep it clean. Be with your kid and shit. We love just having you be Jay Mewes.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, I think this might have been in that time too because he did look thin. I mean, he always has been thin, but yeah, he looks real thin in this one. And his hair is fucking short and shit.
Yeah, he looks all sweaty and shit. Like,
yeah.
Next one is Clue Gulager. I think it's Gulager is how you pronounce it. And he is the father of the director, which I remember in Project Greenlight it being like a big deal. They were like, you can't cast your dad. It's like a main part. But like this dude, as we know, has
so many credits,
horror credits to his name. Dude. Yeah. And most recently with our Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2 episode.
Right. He played the dad in that one. And he did Return of the Living Dead. The comedy. Right. Yeah, the comedy one. Yeah, the first of those ones. But no, he's great. He's great.
Yeah, he is. He's one of those just like gritty, old-timey. And he'll do anything, you know? Like, he's like, yeah, spray me in the face of blood. I love it.
Right. Like, I've seen some shit. Boy. Yeah. Semper Fi. Semper Fidelis, devil dog.
You're going to spray that candy in my face? I've had real men's blood on my face.
Right. He's a tough dude.
And then the just delicious Jenny Wade is Honey Pie.
Oh, she's the one that wants to be the actress.
Right, and, actress, singer, model.
Yeah, anything to get out of this small town.
And went on to do two more Feast movies after this.
I think he had the bartender did too, right? Wasn't he in the...
Yeah. And his wife is in all three of them. It's like, what? Okay.
Ride the wave, dude. Ride the wave.
And then you've got Eric Dane, who played the hero. And like, recognize him? Didn't know what he was from. Looked as he's been in every television show that you've ever seen in the last 20 years.
You see his face and you know him immediately.
But I really wish that it would have been a Matt Damon or a Ben Affleck, or you know, if they could have got like
they talked about it. They talked about it originally.
It would have hit so much harder if it was a big star, and then he's the first one gone.
Right. And, you know, we were used to that shit, especially with those two at this time, you know, with the Kevin Smith stuff that was hitting, you know, big around the same time.
Yeah.
Those little cameos and the world of the cameo was getting bigger, you know.
Right.
Especially with Scary Movie and shit like that. You know, you think of when everybody was just like, oh, yeah, I'll pay my day rate.
Right. Fucking
give me $5,000 to show up for 20 minutes and I'll do it. But yeah, so let's just jump into it, dude.
We open
on this. I don't know. What size film would that be that we're looking at? Like 16 millimeter, maybe?
That might have been 8 millimeter. It was super small.
It's
either 16 like, or 8. Yeah.
Yeah. It's super small. And we just see a desert road, white title card, feast.
Yep.
And the camera's on a gimbal of some sort and just spinning around. This is the only couple moments of peace and silence you get throughout this entire movie. And it's about 30 seconds. And then we just see a fucking car smash into a pole. Ring! Horns going off. The camera continues to pan, and we see the bar across the street where a car is pulling up, and this is our douchebag. And I'm not even going to remember all the names of all the characters, but he's there to play pool and win some fucking money, drink some beer, like be a tough guy, but not a tough guy. His title card is something like town, you know, loser, never going to make it out of here.
Right.
Thinks he's super tough or something like that. As he goes into the bar camera, we see maybe, you know, 5 miles because it's just open flat desert. 5 miles or so, maybe 3 miles. I don't know how fucking far it is, but you can see the fire from where the car hit. And we see a Evil Dead-esque tracking shot, which it'll always be in my mind an Evil Dead-esque tracking shot because they did it right at the first time, where it's just a frantic, you know, kind of very low angle moving quickly. And we hear like hoof print, like da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, nails on rocks and shit like that. We move quickly back to the bar where we're introduced to everybody.
Just boom, 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 boom,
boom, boom,
just
boom,
like flash title cards. Yeah. They didn't even like do that shit in like 1080. It's just like grainy as fuck right out of the footage. Like,
right. Which I think works good for this movie, though. We have you know, one location and that's it, which awesome because you put the money where it needed to be with the effects and shit for the monsters. But yeah, you're right, though. They just kind of pop up. Not as clean as like Zombieland.
No.
Zombieland, it's nice as fuck, dude. Those are some of my favorites. We're in the bar. We've met our goofball. We've met Jay Muse. We met Hot Wheels, the bartender, a vet who is going home on leave to see his wife and kiss her before getting back to the front lines. You ain't never met my wife. And who else do we got? We have Tuffy, who is just miserable as fuck. Her son. What did they call Bozo? Was the beer
Bozo guys was that was Freelander. Yeah.
And this motherfucker, dude, that's one of the things I love about this movie. It's just like the Evil Dead remake. Like, he just cannot fucking die.
Yeah.
And it's and it's hilarious to watch. And we'll get to some. The effects in this movie are top notch.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Still hold up great, dude. Uh-huh. Still hold up great. Was really impressed rewatching it last night. Everybody's kind of in the bar. Tuffy comes down to take a shot because she's essentially sleeping with the bar owner for money. Well, and this is like still is the saddest shit I feel like I've ever seen. When she puts the headphones on the kid, dude. It is. So she's up there, and I think her and all of the title cards had life expectancy.
Yeah,
and some of them are funny, like, oh, they wouldn't do that. Like, Jay Muse was like already surpassed life expectancy, you know,
which is kind of
really
a funny, like, in joke if you know, lifestyle.
Yeah, he lived a wild one for a while,
but they flat out tell you, like, bartender, horrible death in 70 minutes. Like, they flat out tell you,
and they cue all this stuff up in a way where it's still so engaging, even though. Because the title cards right here, you think you're getting into it and like, okay, these are the characters we're going to, you know, we're going to deal with. Jay Muse is playing pool with old boy over in the corner who's a cheater. You know, we see this guy is really being a pretty despicable human being. Nobody really likes him and he doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah.
He's just like, whatever, let's run. He was like, what's his face from Demon Knight? The who was like, I'll make a deal. And Thomas Hayden Church.
It makes you feel good. Do it.
Right. If I like that, if it makes you feel good, do it. And speaking of Demon Knight, I went back and rewatched it right after we recorded. We missed so many effects things where I'm like, when Cordelia turns, dude, and she's the fucking hooker monster on top of him. Yeah. And there was great movie still. It just solidified what we were talking about. I was like, oh, fuck. Yeah. I forgot about that. And how funny he was. Enough of this cowboy shit. You fucking ho dumb, fo dumb. Hey, that there motherfuckers. So back to Feast, though. Everybody in the bar, for the most part, seems pretty downtrodden. You know, this is an out of the way place where Jay Muse, I guess, comes to play pool with people, you know, to gamble his money away.
I got to get away from that Hollywood lifestyle, meet these real down-to-earth people.
Right.
Grassroots.
And this all happens within like a minute, though, where we meet everybody. It's very, very fast. And then out of nowhere, somebody comes busting through the fucking door with a gun. And I like, though, bartenders real quick with the shotgun, like, yo, bro, mine's bigger
than yours.
Yeah. He comes in and he puts the gun down and they're like, who the fuck are you? Title card pops up, hero, like best chance ever of making it. And he does. He comes in like a bad motherfucker, dude. Puts the thing on the table, the head, and he's like, look, there, I don't know what the fuck's happening. There's these things out there. We got to do something. And they're like, who are you? He's like, I'm the best chance of saving your life. Bang, out the fucking window. Dude is gone.
Gets fucking just munched, dude. Just rah, 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 rah. Fucking blood spewing on everybody, dude. His legs are kicking. And he gets pulled out the window, this dude. Is... Hero, gone. Best chance of surviving, gone.
And that's where this movie starts fucking with you.
Yeah.
And just starts killing everybody you don't expect to be killed. So he gets flung out the window. Honey, what was her name? Honey Pie or Honey Boo? Or
Honey Pie.
She gets like splattered with blood.
like a triple spray, dude.
Dude, this is like Evil Dead level of blood. And I love that about it. I'm like, cool, man. If you're going to go for it, go for it. You know, make it big. So he gets sucked out the window. Who's all got guns? So Harley Mama's got her gun because we learned she was going to rob the place. Guy upstairs. Oh, that's right. He's having sex with Tuffy, the bar owner, and the bartender shoots through the fucking floor and blows his foot off. I remember that shit being hilarious the first time. I was like, that's what you get, you piece of shit. Like, and he's even like yelling at her, like, act like you like it at least a little bit or you feel it or something like that. Oh,
it grossed me out because it took me right back to Pulp Fiction. I'm like, oh, he's banging her from behind. He's like, he's going to get out the gimp in a minute.
Where's the gimp? Where's the gimp? Oh, nothing will hit like Pulp Fiction did that first time.
Oh,
like,
God damn, dude. Fuck. When he like is watching, dude, and he licks his lips. Oh, it makes me wanna throw up, dude.
Every time. Just like this movie does. Makes me uncomfortable every time. So they know something's going on downstairs, but a bunch of bad shit is happening downstairs because a little one gets in first, right?
Yeah, the crazy little fucker running around. Just like they're so fast, and that's what impressed me is that these things are practical effects, and they somehow made them look like really ferocious and fast. Like,
well, and I want to say they called it out at some point. One of the characters says it looks like they're covered in animal parts. Like they have just bones and shit. Very ancient.
Well, and that's what I loved about these creatures is that you get little peaks. And every time you see it, you can't put it all together. It's like you get different pieces of the puzzle. But what a great character effect, you know? Like you're hiding your character, but you're still showing us a lot of these things.
Like a super cool arm with three fingers or something on it. Or just the face, you know, that like it almost looks like they have bone masks.
Right. Yeah.
Over top of like a shield.
He pulls it off at the end.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And it's super cool though. But the little one gets in, slices Harley Mama at the fucking knee and just takes her leg right off. Like quick blood spraying everywhere. I think maybe they start to look for it to go shoot it while she's all fucked up. And that's when Jay's like, yo, where'd it go?
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, yeah, up there. And it just comes down and takes his face clean off.
Right off.
But this is funny as fuck because he turns and runs into the wall. Just like, bang. Slams into the wall. So you got faceless Jay Muse. They're going to start trying. Or maybe this is when his wife showed up, the hero's wife. Somewhere right around here.
Yeah. So the thing jumps up onto that deer antlers up on the wall and starts fucking it in the face. And you're like, what the fuck is going on?
That was part of my problem with it. I'm like, damn. And because they go back to that a lot. Like these things. But then, you know, the more I'm even thinking about it now, kind of xenomorph like they're down for nothing but eating and reproducing.
Right.
Like that is it. And the whole time Granny just sits at the bar.
She's sipping her drink, dude.
Yeah. She's like, well, don't act like fucking food. They just seem like they're hungry. She's like, you're running around like an asshole. I'll just sit here and get drunk the whole time. So once our heroine, new title card, she realizes her hubby's dead. It's really sad. She's like, listen, I don't know what the fuck happened. I got a kid I'm trying to get back to. I'm trying to survive this thing. We got to fortify this place. That's our best thing. And then Tuffy's like, oh, no, my fucking kid's upstairs. So She's like, shit, don't go up there. You know, they get the downstairs pretty well secured. Don't go up there. She goes up there anyway because she's a mom. She's going to do that. Her kid was in the closet where she left him. She goes to look. She's like, oh, fuck, he's not here. And he's over in the corner. And the kid's like, mom, got this awesome fucking reunion. Everybody else just makes it into the room. The kid gets fucking snatched, dude, straight out of her arms.
Yeah.
And his blood is like flying back in her face.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
All you see, dude, is the monster's open maw and his foot going down the throat. The thing fucking ate him like full on whole.
Yes. And it was fucking gnarly.
And she's just screaming, dude. She's freaking
out. She's screaming, panicking, dives out of the way. The bartender shows up with the shotgun behind her, but they both duck because the monster spews this like Nickelodeon slime fucking straight into the room.
Yeah.
All the way across to our beer tender, whoever it is that drives the truck, who used to be the JCPenney model. That shit made me laugh again.
That was funny. Was
like, he takes his
can't
head
tell
up.
In these clothes, but in my other clothes, right. I look like a model.
this is my look right here. Spring collection JCPenney as a model once. So he's covered in this fucked up shit. They all take off back downstairs.
What a trooper, though. He gets hosed, dude, with this like torrential downpour of disgusting slime with maggots in it, dude. Those big mealworm looking fuckers.
Yeah, huge maggots all over
out of
him.
His hair, dude, and they're in his
and
mouth.
And the water barely works when they're trying to wash it out of him. And this is the catalyst, though, for him being, in my opinion, the best character through this whole movie. Because this fucker will not die, no matter what happens. And he's just like, oh, yeah, help's coming. He's got at one point maggots falling out of his fucking eyeball. And he asks Honey Boo Boo, he's like, yo, is it all right? And she's like, oh, you're good. He's like, damn, you should have been a nurse when he starts picking maggots off his face.
He goes, does it look better? She's like, uh-huh. And then she goes and pukes in the sink. And he's like, oh, man. He just like pulls the thing back over his eye. So gross, dude.
It is. But this is where he starts to turn a little bit. But back downstairs, Tuffy is super panicked. The bartender is like, what the fuck happened down here? They're trying to gather ammo and shit like that. We get a little more exposition. And I feel like right around here, some more people die. I know the sergeant gets pulled out the window when him and the bartender were trying to board it up. He's like, yeah, we got it. And then a fucking hand just burst straight through his chest. Guts everywhere. And so now we have Tuffy, Honey Pie, the bartender, the bar owner, the heroin, and I think just the beer tender.
And Balthazar Getty's character and his brother, Wheels. And
oh, yes. Wheels and was he Bozo? No, he wasn't Bozo. He was the other one.
Yeah.
But yes. So we have this group and they've got one trapped in the icebox.
The little one. They get him trapped in there. Yeah.
Right. And then they shoot the fuck out of it. And then Henry Rollins is still alive. We forgot about him being a piece of shit. Like he's trying to go home with Honey Boo Boo, but he goes to pay for their drinks and his wedding ring rolls on the table. And I like the bartender just looks at him like, yeah, you piece of shit. Like that's what you get, motherfucker.
Yeah.
And so he's still alive because he survives for quite a while. And they end up taking the little one, coming up with some cockamamie fucking plan to put it outside to show their dominance. Yeah, yeah, that was his
plan.
That
was Rollins. He's like, we have to think outside the box.
Right. We need to band together.
We need to scare them.
Right. Yeah.
And like, how do you do that? He's like, well, let's take, I got an idea. Anybody got a stick?
Right. Give me a pool cue. And so they shove it out the window, which we learn was one of the babies who then the monsters eat and then get it on. And they're like, yo, the monsters are doing it fucking doggy style of shit. And I'm like, that's some of the stuff where I'm like, I don't know how well that aged.
Yeah. I would have probably left that on the cutting room floor. And then it proceeds to shit out a pulsating sack. And he's like, oh, it took a shit.
It's not a shit. It's a baby, you dumbass. Oh, okay. So
can you imagine reading that line on the page? It's not shit. It's a baby, you dumbass.
Right. Hey, you ever see the South Park where Mr. Hanky's kids, the one has a fucking peanut in its head? Or in the video game? I was playing the game. Like, that shit stuck out to me. And it's just like,
Oh, that's Cornelius.
Cornelius. He's got a penis like recorded the set. So now the monsters are super pissed.
Because yeah, now it's personal.
Right.
This is the point where they're like, they get a little chance to kind of like regroup. They take the dead bodies downstairs,
throw them
in the basement and shit. And they're trying to, they realize that there's a radio upstairs because cell phones won't work. Rollins pulls out his shitty ass flip phone with the antenna on it.
Right. They're in the middle of the desert.
We're in the middle of the desert, you dipshit. Like, you ain't going to get nothing out here. Old boy has a two-way radio and a secret, he says, a little cubby in my closet. It's a whole fucking extra set.
Right.
And they send Balthazar Getty up there because they're like, you go up there, dipshit.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, I got to take someone with me.
Yeah,
I can't go by myself.
So this is where they do the Scooby-Doo split up, and half of them go down to the basement to look for some secret exit that they know about.
Are they going down to do that, or were they ready to start throwing the bodies out or getting the bodies ready to feed to the monsters?
Maybe it was that, but...
One or the other. Either way, yeah, they're down in the basement fucking with the bodies while the other two are upstairs.
Yeah.
Wheels has just been, I think, hangs out in the bar the whole time.
He doesn't have a choice. There's stairs everywhere.
Right. But through... You're right, though. So
he can't go down. He can't go up. Wheels is stuck in the bar by himself, that poor bastard.
But during all of this, you know, Tuffy is getting stronger. Wheels, his brother, and I still can't remember what they called him, but he's becoming more of a hero type, but not quickly. Like, it takes him a little while.
Yeah, he's still an asshole. And there's a scene where Tuffy is trying to clean the blood off of her, and she takes her shirt off, of course. And there's no boobies in this movie, but man, is there some cleavage.
And why not?
But she says to him, Wheels and the brother are staring at her, and she's like, act like you got some. And he's like, oh, I got some. And Wheels is flat out like, I never did.
That was good, though. He's like, I never have it to come home.
And he's like sneaking booze and shit. He's like, now's my chance.
Right. Right. He's getting fucked up. And Granny's just still getting fucked up the whole time. She just sits at that bar with her glass and her shit. When did they learn? Do they get the radio? Because I feel like they were talking about somebody coming or possibly having a rescue. Because the payphone got shot off the wall.
Right.
During the scuffle.
He goes up there and it's very creepy. It's one of the good moments of tension because you know the fuckers are in that room somewhere. And he gets into that spare room and he does make a call. But they literally like get a hold of her from the outside and like yank it outside by the cord. The whole radio goes flying. Yes. But he's like, I think I got a call out before they took it.
Right. Okay. And then they come up with the plan to blow them all, like feed them all and blow them all the fuck up.
Right.
Which is cool.
Very cool idea.
But a very like gross moment when we've got our well, I guess she could be like Wheels too. Because now she'll probably need, unless she can get a prosthetic. But they're going to send a sled outside rigged up with explosives that they're going to plug in an extension cord and let the animals start eating it and then try and blow them all up or whatever the creatures are.
Great plan.
And they're going to put bodies on the sled. So they start with Harley Mama. And when they get her on there, she's like, help me. Yeah. And he's like, oh, fuck, she's still alive. And the bar owner looks at her and he's like, no, she's not. I was like, damn.
Fuck.
Oh, savage. That bartender, I was just waiting for that motherfucker to die.
Oh, yeah, man.
Because he does not get a redemption arc. Like,
no,
there's really
he's just
no
a son of a bitch from step one all the way through. Yeah,
all the way through. He's super gross. So they do end up blowing up a couple of the creatures, right?
Well, yeah, they
in like
show
a
him.
Very frantic, like, oh, we're barely gonna make this thing to plug it in, and then
what's hilarious is that they're like, we can make some pipe bombs out of like cleaners and things that are around the bar, and it shows like the Wheels, he's pouring like nail polish remover into a pipe bomb. And then when they show her rigged up, dude, she's got wires and shit, like she's got like a full-on fucking timer. And I was like, whoa, who had this fucking expertise?
And the whole time is like, help me.
Yeah, she's
help
like, help,
me.
Help. And they drag her out and they're all mowing on her, dude. And there's this scene where like this, I was like, the director is gross, dude. Because this is his girlfriend. The camera's through her boobie cleavage.
Oh, yeah.
And
we
see the monsters come in and eat her. And I was just like,
it seems very gratuitous.
It's very gratuitous. And the same thing with her, you know, there's a lot of gratuity in here that doesn't age well, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's like
Three women are in fucking wife beater tank tops. Like the only women I've ever seen wear those tank tops are in movies.
And it was 2006. It was the days of like Euro Trip and shit like that. And,
yeah.
Fuck Van Wilder and all that stuff was still relatively new.
Yeah.
Which I do like fucking, what was the one, Road Trip with Tom Hanks, or not Tom Hanks, Tom Green and the fucking snake when he's trying to get it.
Road Trip's so good, dude.
Yeah, it's fun. Some of that has not aged well either, but it is still fun. So we get some monsters blown up, and then they decide, like, we just got to get the fuck out of here. Okay, let's get a plan to get one of the vehicles. We'll do some distraction things, and then Honey Boo Boo's going to go, or Honey Boo, Honey Bear, whatever her name is. She's going to go out there and get the truck, back the truck up, load everybody in, and then get the fuck out. She goes out and just deuces, bitches.
She's like, they made it. She made it. We're saved. Right. And she fucking rolls out, dude. I was so happy with that moment. That never happens.
It doesn't. She was like, fuck it.
I was like, she's coming back. Nope. No. She just drives the fuck away, dude.
I'm going to Hollywood in a truck
full of Coors Light.
Right. I'm going to Hollywood. Oh, shit. Yeah. But the truck gets decimated really quickly. Right? Don't you see it get like fucked up and run off the road?
No, dude. Like she just rolls out and she's gone.
Maybe.
She makes it to the second and the third.
Oh, does she?
Yeah, she goes through the whole series.
Ah, right on. Good for her. See, I thought some of them came back as different characters. He just, you know, pulled a Rob Zombie and brought him back as others.
The other ones do, but she's listed as Honey Boo for the whole series. Oh,
okay.
Or Honey Pie. You're right. I don't fucking know.
Yeah. I'll have to go back and watch. I only watched the second and third one once. I don't recall them as fondly as I do the first, but I'll still go back and watch them.
I remember they like threw a baby or something.
Like, man, I mean, if you know, you watch all three Human Centipedes and you can watch three equal anything.
Honey Pie. Why is that so hard to remember?
She's gone. They're fucking panicked. What are we gonna do? And who, I think though, this is right around where the bartender dies, because I feel like he was part of like the distraction or something and gets caught up outside.
Yeah, Henry Rollins.
Like,
so Henry Rollins at one point gets pulled against the wall like everybody does, and everybody dies at that moment because they get torn through. Somehow, it just tears his pants off.
Right.
And they're looking at him, he must be hanging dong.
Right.
And so, and it's funny, too, because he's this, like, straight-laced, like, character, and he's got this wicked leg tattoo they didn't bother to cover up. And then Tuffy says, hey, I got some sweatpants behind the bar if you want to put them on. And so he's rocking these pink sweats through the rest of this movie.
Which are amazing.
And then he winds up outside somehow. And he's gone, like, to the point where we forget about him. And then he comes back in to get his death on camera. At this point, that's all it, we are. Like, it's just chaos. People are getting murdered left and right. They're like, we gotta ring the dinner bell.
Right. Yeah, because and when we say this movie is fast, it is fucking fast.
It is. Yeah, people are just dying left and right. Blood is going all over. Sometimes I thought somebody was like toast, and it's just like a flesh wound.
Right. Oh, you forgot though that when she was on the ground, that thing came and had sex with her face. One of the other things.
Yeah,
that makes it so gross.
You're right. That's what it was. Yeah, he has his girlfriend get face raped with her boobies hanging out in the camera
by a little monster.
I was like, that's too much. That's too much.
That is too much.
That would have never aged well.
So how do we get to our? Because Rollins wasn't in the car with them at the end, right? It was just wheels.
No, he got killed.
Yeah, but I can't remember exactly how he got killed, but he makes it longer than you think he should make it.
Right.
Yeah, the ones who should have made it die early and the ones who shouldn't have made it end up making it. Some of them with, like, our new hero's arc and, you know.
Well, and our boy wheels. Bozo, he's rotting in the face. He's got these nasty black veins going up and there's something moving in his arm. He's real tore up.
And they're going to Molotov cocktail the whole fucking place.
The bartender is like, all you got to do is light this fucking thing and throw it.
Right.
And he's like,
and as the chaos is happening, he drops his lighter at one point as one of the things is going to like cut his head off.
Yeah.
He dropped his lighter and he goes to bed. Like, he cannot fucking die, dude. Yeah. This dude can't do it. But he does end up blowing the whole fucking place up.
Yeah.
And we think, you know, killing all the monsters, but we got two sequels. So there are more of these things. But leading up to the credits, is wonderful because they all get in the car, get ready to tear ass out of there. We get some sweet music, a beautiful sunrise. And our true hero is Tuffy. Like, she's the one who stakes in the fucking ground. Like, she had made these melee type weapons and was fucking fighting. Yeah,
dude, she had like a pole and she just like takes forks and knives to it. And she's coming out like an Amazon warrior. I was like, yeah, dude.
She looked like Wonder Woman. I was like, that's dope. Because you're right. The sun was like shining. The sun is perfect on her silhouette.
Yeah, she was badass.
Yeah, dude. She was a badass. Great final girl. Great final girl.
Yeah, so it's her and the shitty dude, Balthazar Getty, who was an asshole through the whole thing, but kind of winds up being the hero on accident.
And somehow his transition works for me. Yeah, even though it was relatively quick, it does work.
And it's because he loves his brother, dude.
Yeah, that's what makes it. He was like, he picked him up and he's like, come on, bro, we got to go. And he's, you know, he's firefighting, carrying him fucking out of there. And they get in the car, go to take off, and the fuck car dies. And that shit is so funny, dude, because they're out in the...
She gets out to push it.
Right. She gets out to push from the passenger side. It goes to start up. They get in, take off, end of movie. It's a good ride. It's a fun one.
Did you see the after credit sequence?
I don't think I did this time, no.
Oh, shit.
I don't remember.
So it pans down to the basement, and it's just like fucking melee. Everything's destroyed. Fucking granny comes out of the freezer, dude, and she was hiding in there the whole time, and then she gets fucking munched from something off camera.
Oh, right on.
Yeah.
She, you know what she reminds me of is David Arquette's aunt or whoever from Eight-Legged Freaks.
Totally.
They were smoking all the cigarettes all the time and shit. Yeah. Even though she was lucky enough to live. But that's cool. So, I mean, always set up a sequel in a horror movie.
Always.
Always. Always. There's no reason not to because you never know.
Yep.
You never know. And this one did hit good. For the most part, you know, it was received well. I think even now it's like not a perfect movie, but it is enjoyed by most.
It is. Yeah. It's almost so gross that it's there's parts in it where I'm like, fuck, dude, that's too far. The whole movie, you're getting just they're getting just covered in blood and shit and piss and every other thing.
If you think about the monsters in that light, though, more. But you're right. It's kind of how the writing and directing presented some of it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was more like animals having human sex, not animals having the sex that animals would have.
Right.
Or those creatures. You know what I mean? Yeah. It just seems different. I mean, I guess, you know, to each their own. However you want to get down, get down. But this one's got some weird shit. So out of 5 gross, greasy, pagan creatures, how many do you give Feast from 2006?
All right. I struggled with this one, bro. I struggled.
I did too. I did too.
I fucking love this movie and it's a great ride, but like I get that it's not good. Like if you showed it to somebody and you're like, this is a great movie, dude, you got to check this out. Like it's not that.
Right.
It's like get high and have a fucking good time and you want to see some fucked up shit. It's perfect.
It's an assault on your
senses. It's a 5 for that. But like I was like, if a 5 is Jaws, you can't say Feast is a 5.
Right. No.
But I also say like if a 3 is that I'd watch it again, then it's got to be a 4 because I've watched it several times and I still enjoy the fuck out of it.
We can have half greasy pagan creatures.
Okay, I'm going to give it 3.5 greasy fucking gross pagan creatures.
I agree with you, dude. I agree with you. As I was thinking about it, I was like, fuck. But what rewatching, I'm like, damn, some of this is just not, you know, it was a time and place things. Like Jaws is still scary as fuck today.
Yes.
You know, Feast was of its time. It was a product of an era that is gone. You know, Trading Places was funny as fuck when it came out. But you watch it today and you're like, damn, dude, like some of this is rough.
Yeah.
You know, like and I feel like this, like you said, suffers from some of the same thing. Whereas timeless horror, you know, your Psychos and your 74 Texas Chainsaw Massacre. There's some things that this is not.
Exactly.
And you're right.
This never bothers to set up a scene where you're like, oh, that was off camera, and my imagination's going to fill it in worse than it really is. Nope.
Right.
Everything's not just on camera, but in your fucking face.
Right.
Yeah.
But it is so worth watching Jay Mews run into the wall after his fucking face.
There's
is
so much.
Up.
They know their
there's
humor.
So much good. Yeah. It's comedy and horror.
If
done
you
right.
love The Evil Dead, like this is right up your alley.
Sure. Yeah. I would agree with that. Not as good.
No,
but I would agree with that because you don't have, you know, your Ash Williams.
Exactly. You kind of have like 20 Ash Williams that all get murdered.
That's the hard part is everybody becomes something for 45 seconds and then it gets shifted again on its head. But it does work. It's a fun movie. Like you said, it's one that I will watch again. I know at some point I'll go back and watch Feast. Haven't watched it in a couple of years. So revisiting it last night, that's why I was like, hey, that's different.
Yeah.
That's different.
And it's an hour and 25 minutes, dude. It just
so like, it's not a big. It, and yeah, I want to say I watched it on Tubi. So oh, it's out there for.
Yes, I had a hard time finding it. So Tubi does not sponsor this show, of course. But I do want to say, like, whenever I can't find a movie and I'm looking for that deep pull, Tubi always is my boy.
Tubi's
dude.
The shit, dude. Tubi is the shit. I tell people, I'm like, don't sleep on it. It's like free as fuck. Like that and Pluto are like free, like as free as you can get.
And it has and ads, good shit on but there were probably three ads through the whole movie, and they were like 30 seconds, just real.
There's
quick.
One at the beginning, maybe one a little bit, you know, kind of in the middle, and then Yeah, and so it's not it, like dude. Watching on YouTube or some shit where you're getting ads, like, you know, every fucking 45 seconds.
Right.
Holy fuck. How can I get engaged in this when you're breaking it up every 15 minutes?
Yeah.
All right. So 3.5 from both of us. I like it. Feast. Next week, before we forget, I know you got some exciting news. Why don't you put that out there?
Absolutely. As everybody knows, or maybe don't know, I don't know. I worked on a television series called Going Home Season 2, which actually premiered Friday night.
Nice.
For anybody who has PureFlix. I know it seems like a weird thing, but you know, when you're starting out, you just like hop onto a crew somewhere, you know? And a lot of these people were from Z Nation, which was filmed here in Spokane. So a lot of these people had like horror backgrounds and were real lovers of that. And we all like, that's what we all talked about on lunch. We're like, let's not talk about all this Christian shit. Let's talk about good stuff. So, so we were working on this movie and I met this guy. I was actually doing the dishes after lunch and these dudes were talking like deep pools on horror stuff. And I was like, you guys, you're my boys. I walked over and I handed them like, I was like, you guys got to listen to my podcast. Like we do what you guys are talking about basically. So I met this guy, Sean Springer. He's worked on a ton of stuff locally. He's done a lot of the big movies too. And he agreed to come talk to us. And I said, what movie would you do if you could pick anything? And he said, Psycho Gorman. And I was like, wow, perfect for what we're doing.
Yes.
So we're going to talk about
Psycho
that
and Psycho Gorman. I'm really excited to talk to this dude. I'm very excited about it because anybody who has that kind of love for Psycho Gorman,
right?
That was one of the ones that I just bought on iTunes based on the fucking cover. It was like, you know, $12 or something when it first premiered. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to grab that. Watched it, fucking loved it. Watched it. Well, I think once again since it came out. But it is so, yeah, I'm stoked to talk to anybody because it's a fucking weird, fun, like crazy ride. I don't know how to describe. I don't want to say too much about it because,
it'll unveil itself. But I'm excited to talk about him and I want to hear his point of view from somebody who's been involved in like these low budget horror movies and
see
where it sits. So maybe he can give us some cool knowledge and background on it.
So that'll be cool. So next week we'll be chatting up with Sean about Psycho Gorman. So if you want to check out Psycho Gorman, I know it's available on most of the streaming platforms. You know, you can rent it, stuff like that. It might be streaming somewhere that I don't know. Just, you know, dig around the streaming services and see if you can figure it out. It's weird that that's the world we live in now instead of like, yo, can I get it at the video store or some shit?
Yeah, dude. I miss it. Yeah. I miss it. But like at the same time, like so convenient.
It is very convenient, but it does take, I feel like, take some of the love out of, or, you know, the excitement.
Part of the thrill was the hunt, dude. I'm going to Blockbuster and I might come away empty.
And the artwork had to be so good to get you to fucking pick up some, you know, like Puppet Master and shit. Like those covers, dude, were just iconic. I remember certain covers scaring the shit out of me for extended periods of time. Like,
oh,
that's
dude.
Creepy.
Chud.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
I always want to rent Chud just because that cover.
And Chud's not even that scary of a movie.
No.
When you go, you know, you go and watch Chud. But you're right. The fucking cover was like, I don't like it. People Under the Stairs. That cover scared me, dude.
Yeah.
The like Skull House or whatever it was. Yeah, that was a good one. Okay, we're already going a little bit long, but we had to give Feast its due time. But we got to make sure we take a little time to talk about some things. So I found, I don't know how these books ended up in my backpack. I took them to work with me and I was like, hey, anybody want to read any of these books? And they were like, no, not really. And I was like, cool. And so I put them back in my backpack and brought them back home. And I was just kind of flipping through, looking at my own notes. And I'm going to start with Marcus Aurelius, which is a little heavy for some people. If you don't know Aurelius, he was just learned about Marcus Aurelius. Dude is absolutely amazing. You know, nobody's perfect, but okay. So I'm going to read this from his Meditations. And this is a little bit longer, and then we're going to come back to a more, I think, kind of a modern take on this. So he says, judge every single word or deed that is in accordance with nature as worthy of you. And do not trouble yourself if reproach or gossip should follow. Sit on that for a second. Do not trouble yourself if reproach or gossip should follow. But rather, if something noble is to be done or said, do not judge yourself unworthy of doing or saying it. For others have their own ruling part and follow their own particular inclinations, to which you should not direct your gaze, but continue on your straight path, following both your own personal nature and the universal nature, for the paths of both of these are actually one. So don't worry about what people are around you are doing, dude. Just fucking figure out what you got to be doing and do that shit. Like, the time, life is so short. I'm going to say that a lot. Life is fucking so short. And if you're not on, you know, the path, then I would say the next step would be is figure out how to put yourself on that path. You know, what is the next step that I need to do to get there? And now we're going to go to, this is a super cool book. It's a small one. Modern author, Ryan Holiday, dude is the shit. And this one's called Ego is the Enemy. And it's a good one, dude. It's a good one. I can't wait to get my little fuck ego tattoo. but this, it's not going to say fuck ego. I thought about that for a while because I'm like, that is how I feel about it. But, so, okay, here we are right here. Looks like I underlined a couple things. There's like writing all over this shit, but all right. Passion is form over function. Purpose is function, function, function. But passion is form over function. Now listen to this next part because these kind of tie together. Leave passion for the amateurs. Leave passion for the amateurs. Your passion will not fucking get you there. It will not. You have to have steps that you are taking to move you towards goals. There's nothing, but this continues a little bit. Make it about what you feel you must do and say, not what you care about and wish to be. You know what I mean? If you're just sitting around daydreaming and shit, like, oh, I'm so fucking passionate about art. I'm so fucking passionate. But if you're sitting around doing something that's not that, then you're just passion. There's not, like, the passion's not going to go anywhere. I could be passionate about, I'm passionate as fuck about Star Wars, but I'm not trying to like build a fucking AT-AT in my backyard.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, no, you totally can be passionate about something, but if your passion is not aligned with action and form, it doesn't matter. And I've learned throughout the course of my, you know, short existence that action will beat motivation every single fucking time. It'll beat passion. It'll beat motivation every single time because motivation seems to be predicated by action. You start doing something and then you're like, oh shit, this feels good. I'm sure you've done it a million times. Like, I don't want to fucking write. And then you get like four sentences in and you're like, oh, my old friend, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, hello, but rarely is it like, oh, right. It's a good song. But passion doesn't do anything on its own.
No, you're absolutely right. And that like resonates with me really hard right now because I'm really struggling with the whole, you know, I'm 45 years old, dude. And I've been passionate as fuck about movie making. And guess what? I still have, well, I can't say I haven't made money making movies. I have.
Right.
But, you know, it's been a soul crushing journey in a lot of ways. But it's
I,
not see, over.
And I think that's, you're right. It's never over, dude. Look at all the people that didn't start until their 40s and shit. Like actors, writers, there's a ton of them. Never let, like, you got to stop looking behind you, homie, and be like, I'm just right here, right now. Is what you are doing moving you closer to like having a fucking quality thing that you're proud of that you were like, yo, I made this fucking thing. But yeah, passion, it just doesn't. It doesn't do anything. Like, you know, you get, and I'm somebody who I feel like throughout my life I've been passionate about so many things that I never pursued.
Right.
Like, I was like, I really want to do this. I really want to do that. I really want to do this. You know, so many things. But now I feel like I am on this path of like, I know what the fuck I am supposed to be doing right now.
Right.
I'm supposed to be coloring on people and trying to fucking help people in whatever way I can. But some people look at that and they're like, you're fucking crazy. Like, I donate to charity and don't write it off in my taxes because I'm like, there should be no benefit for that shit. And they're like, what the fuck? Like, how? But I can't listen to that shit. I'm just like, I know, because this is the only thing that feels natural. Like, I'm in line with some kind of universe. I don't know, dude. I can't fucking explain it all the way. But I feel like this path that I am on is a path of, like, alignment. Like, things are fucking lined up. And, you know, that's not to say that, like, heartache and fucking pain and hurt and all that shit are still not going to exist. They're going to exist to me all the time, but I think on the path, it's the, at least this path that I'm kind of walking. Again, I don't know what the fucking path is or how to fucking name it, but I can deal with that better than I've ever been able to before in my life. I know what to do with suffering, or at least how to calm it down a little bit and not let it take me over.
Absolutely. And it goes to what you were saying, that like you're taking actions and other people think your actions are crazy. But yes, they're all showing you your path. All these actions that you're taking outside of the path are aligning on your path. And you're like, right. Oh, holy shit. Now I see what I'm doing and where I'm going. And it's all because it's not because you're passionate about helping people, because you're fucking doing something to help people.
Right. Yeah, you're right, dude. It's trying to walk and you know, being that, like, I want to be a fucking love and kindness ghost in the world. Like, I don't care so much about Joe anymore or Pops Ghostly, you know. Pops Ghostly is great because it's this, you know, it's such a fucking deep pull, dude. Like, it is the deepest of fucking pulls. Like, I went into a used video game store where this game, Pops Ghostly, comes from. The Rescue of Pops Ghostly. It was on a console called the Action Max that you hooked up to your VCR and you put a cassette tape in, and it had a light gun that you would shoot at it.
Yeah, dude.
And I went into this big fucking resale shop. You know what I mean? Like, these people had game cards for like $500-$600, you know, and a huge selection of shit. And I'm like, dude, you ever seen an Action Max? He's like, never in my life. So this thing must have been so short lived and probably in the clearance bin. You know, my mom couldn't get us a Nintendo. It was like, here's Action Max. But it was this Legend of Pops Ghostly and shit, or the Rescue of Pops Ghostly was the game that I remember. And you went through a haunted house and they were like, woo, you know, it was never calibrated right. But yes, the idea of really, you know, no Pops Ghostly, no real kind of self, and just a selflessness. Just be a little like beacon of fucking peace if I can, like, and bring that shit to people. I don't know. But you're right. Passion. No, dude. Passion don't. You got to have some fucking, you got to set goals for yourself, because time is going to continue to go by no matter what.
Yeah. There's a million assholes in Hollywood. It's a perfect example. There's a million assholes in Hollywood that are doing it. And they don't deserve to be there, but they took the actions necessary to start making things happen, and the things fell in line for their career. And
now, some of those actions, though, are you willing to take those actions?
Exactly. I mean, you need to be able to take at least two dicks in the mouth at the same time.
Right.
It's hard to fit them next to each other. Do you go on top of each other? How do you get them in there, dude? Do you, like, leave room for balls? I mean,
that's a lot. That's a lot, dude.
And your jaw locks up on that, and fuck, dude, you're going to the ER. Yeah. And then you got to explain that shit to a nurse.
Hollywood's been gross for a long time.
It's been real gross, dude. And it's changing a little bit, but it's still real gross.
It's gross ethically, but I also think it's really gross financially. Mm. It has stripped away the creative freedom from a lot of people who want to be seen on a bigger stage. You know, there are a few names. If your name is fucking Christopher Nolan, if your name is Martin Scorsese, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Right.
But those are like two out of, you know, if you're like, oh, I just got my first job on this big Marvel movie, and then it got fucking ruined by controversy because Jonathan Majors did some shit and then this and that. And, you know, there's a lot of people trying who are just stuck by a system that, you know, we built and you and I support. You know, we put our money into it and go see that shit and support that shit. But at the same time, it is, you hear a lot of the, especially the old Hollywood secret rooms and shit.
Yeah,
and,
dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Be a John Gulager. He got $3 million to make Feast from Project Greenlight. This movie made back $57,000.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And he made two more of them.
Right.
How the fuck? Like, if I dropped that much money on a movie and failed so miserably, I'd be like, I'm going to go flip burgers at In-N-Out, dude. Like, this isn't my thing. But this motherfucker was like, no, I'm going to make two more sequels that don't make money.
Dang. It's impressive. And then you've got people on the other side, like your Roger Cormans of the world, who make movies for like fucking 20 grand. And they're like, hey, I made 40. Let's put 20 back in. We'll try and make 60.
Yeah.
Let's just keep and never lost a fucking dime. Yeah. Like running around parks and shit with cameras and not giving a fuck.
I bet he's made movies that he forgot that he made.
Oh, for sure, dude. I saw him at a public speaking event. He was getting interviewed by fucking Michael Moore, of all people.
Oh, shit.
So who? But, you know, Moore didn't bring any politics or anything to it, which was cool. He's a Michigan native, and I think he's a big it's him. I think Tom Morello, maybe Jeff Daniels do the Traverse City Film Festival, which mm-hmm. brings in some good shit. It's awesome up there that right. time of year for the film festival. But I saw Roger Corman interviewed and he's just like, I made so many fucking movies, dude. It was, you know, that's what they were doing. They were just, it was a machine. It was like, yeah. we're not, you know, we know what the people want to see, what they like, and we're just going to try and be creative people in the old with $2.
Right.
How do we do this with fucking $2? And, you know, the Robert Rodriguez's, I think Tarantino, we've had that conversation about, you know, just kind of repackaging some really cool shit and writing amazing dialogue. But yeah, those days, I feel like are YouTube now.
Yeah, for sure. Those days are over. But we're on the precipice of that next great thing, dude. And I hope that I can figure it out before it happens.
See, but don't be looking for the great thing, dude. Just find what the fuck you're supposed to be doing and focus your energy on it. Don't be looking at, oh, I want to achieve this. Just be achieving it actively, writing or, you know, whatever. It can happen, dude. It can happen. You make a movie. One day we will get together somewhere, you know, take like 2 weeks. Well, you know, shoot a little 15 minute something that's really fucking good.
Yeah, dude.
Like really good. I feel like I know a lot of the pieces of my life, I feel like are lined up enough to where I can be like, oh, you know, fucking video, you know, this, you know, that, you know, this. To where, you know, you could probably make it for 25 grand,
yeah,
you know, and yeah. do some really cool shit for like 15 minutes and put it out there. And even if it never went anywhere, you still followed. That was the path. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's the way you're supposed to be going. Never for the goal. I don't want to be famous.
Right.
I want to be the best at just what the fuck I'm doing right now.
Yeah.
And that's all that really matters. Because if I'm focused on that, now I got people who are willing to come to my tattoo chair like, hey, tattoo some Black Christmas shit on me. And I'm like, you know, so every step I take is like, am I working towards? And that's not all day. I take a lot of fucking breaks in my day. Relaxation is important. Rest is super important to me. I make sure I'm not, you know, burning myself out because that's stupid on the other side. You know, if you're like, oh, I want to do this, but I want to do it in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
it's like, no, it doesn't work like that. But if I draw just for 2 hours a day, extra hours, you know, that I would normally on top of, all I got to do that for is a week. I got 14 extra hours of drawing in. Do it for 2 weeks. I got 28, you know, keep doing the fucking math.
Yeah.
And it makes sense that I'm getting better just because I'm walking a path towards what I see is getting, you know, better at my craft. And so, but don't look at the goal. Like, you know, I, there's always that part of us though, that wants that, you know what I mean? To go up against my peers and show that I am at your level and shit like that. I'm trying to fight a lot of that because I can be a super prideful person and I'm trying to beat the shit out of that. Have been for the past couple, probably year and a half, really focusing on that. Because as soon as you feel like you've done it, then you stop creating what I think we're supposed to be creating.
Yeah, Robert Rodriguez.
Hey, Spy Kids was all right though. I like Spy Kids.
Yeah, and he's rebooting it a fucking again, like a third time.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's a long time. But I feel like once you feel like you've hit that place and when you do start making tons of money and shit, then they start telling you like, oh, you're great, you know, and it's hard to fight that. But the more you can fight that and turn those voices off, just like that shit was saying, you know, like gossip and noise can be bad or good.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if somebody's like, oh, you're the best or you're the worst. You're listening to the same shit. So next week we'll hang out with Sean. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Maybe one day we'll talk about like emails and shit where you can send stuff. I know Carl Beefstar's got that stuff all set up. But yeah, thank you for hanging out with us. Hope you have a great rest of your week. And we'll be back next week to talk to you more. So for the Horror Pop Extravaganza, I've been Pops Ghostly.
And I'm Carl Beefstar.
Stay beefy, kids.
Stay beefy.
Stay beefy.